How's everybody feeling? Good? I feel pretty good after that meditation. I almost sat to destroy the silence by more words. As I said before the break, before the meditation, I said maybe I'm teaching things in a way that's too intellectual. Yeah? And I'm a bit afraid of that. Because the intellect can lead us, many ways that are not the way of silence, the way of meditation. And so I wondered about this intellect. Can we use it in a useful way? And when I use thinking and apply it to the suttas, I usually try to find a way to interpret the suttas in a way that makes things more easy and not more complicated. Because I find it's very simple to make things more complicated, but it's very complicated to make things more simple. So when I try to explain things to you, I hope to make the teachings of dependent origination more accessible and simplify things. So last week I looked at the question, why did the Buddha teach dependent origination? And can we find a simple answer to this question? Often when you look at teachings on dependent origination, you find things like this. I showed you this last week. You find things like this, like all these kind of schedules. And you know, like, oh, this looks like a mess. It's really, this to me doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel like the teaching of the Buddha. Because the Buddha, when I read the suttas, I get this sense that he tried to understand things, try to explain things in as simple a way as possible. And I see everybody's now looking at this slide instead of at me. And my whole point with this slide is don't pay attention to this guy. You know? So I've got a secret button here. Bam. And now dependent origination has ceased now. Wish it was that simple. Anyway, when I read the suttas, as I said, I get this sense that the Buddha could explain things in a way that even the most simple person would understand it. Yeah? What kind of IQ do you need to have to understand dependent origination? 120? 110? 100? 100 apparently is average. Maybe lower?
Just not deaf. Not
bad. Yeah, somebody is saying here, as long as you're not deaf, and then you can understand the teachings of the Buddha. Yeah, and I agree with that. The Buddha apparently was such a good teacher that he was able to even get a 7-year-old boy enlightened. That's what we see in the suttas. That's pretty cool. Or maybe that 7-year-old boy was an IQ of 200. No, we don't know, but I suppose it was just an ordinary boy, right? And we've got in the suttas, we've got people who are just simple fishermen or just simple farmers or even people who are almost crazy who get enlightened. But the Buddha, to me, taught in a way that was accessible to ordinary people and not to people, not just to people who like to intellectualize things and philosophize about things. Yeah? He taught things in a very practical manner. So when we looked at, last week we looked at this question, why dependent origination? Why did the Buddha teach dependent origination? It comes down to some very simple points, actually. The dependent origination, he taught, to explain the noble truth. And when people are taught the noble truth, they often say, I understand that, but I don't understand dependent origination. But that is much more complicated. The Four Noble Truths I get. Dependent origination, I don't. As we said before, in the myth-busting, some people think, oh, that is just too intellectual, dependent origination. But the whole point of dependent origination is to explain the Four Noble Truths. Even explanation would be more difficult than the thing it explains. It sort of defeats the point, right? The point of an explanation is always to be more accessible than the underlying principle it's trying to explain. So that's what I tried to point out last week. And also that dependent origination provides more, quote, weapons. And by weapons, I mean tools we can use in our lives to reduce suffering and eventually get out of it. We can think of dependent origination giving us, well, on one side, some sort of intellectual tools, ways to think about things, ways to contemplate life. But on the other hand, it also gives us teachings which should be inspiring and which make sense and which we feel have some truth in them. And that inspiration we can then use in our meditation. And through that inspiration, find joy in the teachings. Is the microphone? Yes, it's still working. So this week I want to do the same. Well, first of all, last week, did I make some sense with what I was explaining last week for those who were here? Yeah? I see some people nodding heads. That's good. As long as I get a few people along, then I'm happy. You can never get everybody along. So. And that'll probably be more the case this week because although I had a little bit of a complaint about intellect before the break, what I'm about to talk about this week may be one of the more intellectual aspects of dependent origination, or at least that's how it's usually perceived and how it's usually talked about. And namely, I want to talk today, together with Ajahn Brahmali, not just me, we want to talk about the principle of dependency. Yeah? What do we mean by dependent, the word dependent in dependent origination? What does that mean? And mainly we want to look at a difference between two principles. This week we look at a principle, the difference between principle of causality, or causal, or dependency, dependent. The Buddha, he taught dependent origination. He didn't call it causal dependent origination, or causal origination. So not causal origination, but dependent origination. And why? Why is that? Well, first of all, often we find quotes like these in books, and we may even say these things also, but we find these kind of things. Dependent origination is cause and effect. Dependent origination is also called the law of causality. And these are quotes that we find. These are not by the Buddha. Yeah, these are quotes by people who try to explain dependent origination. And we're no longer myth-busting like before. We're now just, this is a new session, no longer myth-busting. So I don't want to look at this, these kind of quotes as being myths or misinterpretations or wrong. What I think is there's some truth to this kind of quote, but we can simplify the principle behind dependent origination further. And we'll look at that in much more detail later. So just as before, I simplified last week dependent originations, all the different factors, 12 factors, I've simplified them down to the noble truths. Yeah? And this week I want to have the underlying principle that links those factors together and have a look at that and simplify that as well. Yeah? Is everybody would be happy for me to talk about that? Otherwise I would have to prepare some other slides or something. That would be funny.
Quick, fast.
Yeah. You also happy, Arjun?
I'm very happy.
Yes.
Supremely happy.
Well, I know, because we talked about this before, and actually we got a lot of interesting thoughts together talking about this. So I hope this will trigger some interesting ideas in you as well. First of all, what do I not like about causality, calling dependent origination the law of causality? Again, the Buddha didn't say that. Other people say that. Why does that not really ring so true to me? I'll illustrate with a story from the Sufi tradition. So the Sufi tradition is from the Middle East. I think it came from Iran or somewhere there. It's later than the Buddha. So just know this is not from the suttas. This is from another religion. But I find that all those Sufi stories, they are really funny. They have this Nasruddin guy in them. Nasruddin is supposed to be some sort of a holy man, and he always has interesting adventures and stuff. So those stories are really nice. And this is one of those stories, not a much of an adventure, but still it sort of makes a nice point, I think. So what is faith? Nasruddin was asked by a scholar. So Nasruddin being this wise guy that you see there on the right, and the scholar obviously is representing intellect, the intellectual side of things. And then Nasruddin answered, an endless succession of intertwined events, each influencing the other. Well, this is not dependent origination, but he just has some sort of idea. That is hardly a satisfying answer. I believe in cause and effect. That's what the scholar answers. Very well, said the Nasruddin. Look at that. He pointed to a procession passing in the street. That man is being taken to be hanged. Is that because somebody gave him a silver piece and enabled him to buy the knife with which he committed the murder? Or because somebody saw him do it? Or because nobody stopped him? Or because this, or because that, or because... Yeah, you see where I'm going at? When you think in terms of cause and effect, you can have millions of causes of things. And Nasruddin is here pointing to this. Now, a bit more of a formal definition more of a formal way of looking to the difference between causal versus dependent. And when I say the word dependent, then that is synonymous to conditional. So you see there in the title, causes versus dependent, or conditional, yeah. Dependent and conditional, those two terms, as far as I'm concerned, are interchangeable. And now here, this is from the Wikipedia. When I was in university, my professors always warned me, don't use Wikipedia, you can't trust Wikipedia because people can put it on there whatever they want. But I actually find it's actually pretty good, actually. So these kind of things you can find not just on Wikipedia, you can find elsewhere as well. But Wikipedia is free, which is good for monks. You know, we don't have any money, we don't have to buy the books.
It's free but wrong.
Free but wrong, no. It has good stuff on it. Anyway. So this is what Wikipedia says, quote, conditional statements are not statements of causality. Confusion commonly arises since many different statements in English may be presented using if, then form. So this the first line is really the most important thing. Conditional statements are not statements of causality per se. This sounds very abstract, maybe. I'll give more examples later what this means. But the point is, causality and dependency, they're slightly different. Yeah? And the point I'm going to make is that dependency may be easier to understand than causality, just like Nasruddin, he was really confused about causality. Yeah? Dependency may be a bit easier. And if If we make things easier, they may be more inspiring as well. Another point on causality. In general, a process has many causes, which are also said to be causal factors for it. That's just another name, causal factors, yeah, for causes. And all lie in the past. This is like almost a definition of what causes mean in philosophy, but also in the way we use the word in normal English. So 2 points to be made from this is here. If we think in terms of causes, then in general, a process has many causes. Yeah? Causes can be endless, just as we saw with the story of the Nasruddin. He asking, what is the cause for this man to be hanged? Is it that he bought a knife, or is it this, or is it that? Yeah, there can be many causes. And another thing about causes is sort of by definition, causes all lie in the past of the effect. First, you have a cause, then you have an effect. Sometimes people define causes differently. Yeah? They say they can arise at the same time. But generally, as it says here, in general, when people think in terms of causes, they lie in the past and the effect in the future of that cause. But we've seen with dependent origination that there are certain factors which arise together. Yeah? We've seen, for example, this concept that is we will explain in more depth later, but with which we've already referred to quite often, is the link between consciousness and the nama rupa, which is like the other aspects of a being, you know, like the other four khandhas, you could say. Yeah? Those two, they depend on one another. They happen at the same moment, you could say. There's not like one happens before the other. So this is another reason why thinking in terms of causes sometimes makes things more complicated. Yeah? Everybody with me? Oh, that's pretty cool. I thought this was going to be not understandable. But in case you're not with me, I will give you some more concrete examples of the difference between causes and dependencies. Number one example of the difference. Just to be clear, some of these examples, they just illustrate the general principle, the difference between the general principles of causality versus dependency. They are not about dependent origination per se, just the principle, yeah, of dependency and causality. So this is an example. For rain to fall, there need to be clouds, right? Nobody's ever seen rain on a clear day. I don't think so, anyway. So, we could say, rain depends on clouds. Or in other words, clouds are a condition for rain. Clouds do not really cause rain, right? Nobody ever said clouds cause rain. Humidity and gravity, among many other things, they are what you could say cause rain. That makes it a bit more sense. Yeah? Does this example illustrate the difference between dependency and causality to you? Yeah? Who is not with me? Just raise it. Just don't be shy if you're not following along. Ajahn Brahmani, you're following along?
Sort of, yeah.
Wow. I think everybody does have an IQ of 200 in here, actually. This is pretty amazing. All right. Because I'm half not getting what I'm saying sometimes. Anyway, another example. Another example of this difference between causality and dependency. For it to be Christmas, it needs to be December the 25th, right? Nobody celebrates Christmas on on May the 2nd or whatever, yeah? It's December the 25th. That's when it's Christmas in Australia, anyway. In the Netherlands, we have a second day of Christmas, the day after, haha. So this is example applies to Australia. So we could say Christmas depends on December the 25th, or in other way, other words, December the 25th is a condition for Christmas, right? It's a condition for Christmas because on May the 2nd, it's not Christmas, right? It has to be December the 25th for it to be Christmas, yeah? You would really look like a fool if you put on your Christmas hat and put your Christmas tree on May the 2nd. People would think, yeah, that's not right, right? So we could say, December the 25th does not really cause Christmas, right? Santa Claus causes Christmas. Ho, ho, ho. Yeah? Well, this is silly, of course. Santa Claus doesn't cause Christmas. Christmas is so many causes. We don't even think of causes when we think about Christmas. What causes Christmas? Who asked that question, right? Nobody asked that question. Where I'm steering you now is to get to think of dependent origination in this similar fashion, not in terms of causes, but in terms of dependencies. Just a little disclaimer. We have used the word cause before, right? And many people who explain dependent origination, they use it as well. Not saying it's always wrong to think in that kind of sense. But I do think that when the Buddha was speaking about dependent origination, he was usually speaking not about causes, but about dependencies, right? And now is another example, and this one does apply to dependent origination, because before you die, you need to be born. True? We can all agree with that. Nobody's ever died who wasn't born. That will be something else. So death depends on birth, we could say. Or, in other words, birth is a condition for death. Yeah? This is one of the links in dependent origination. In normal English, we do not say birth does not really cause death when we in normal language, right? We don't say, Ajahn Brahmani made this joke before of the Buddhist coroner, that's somebody who handles dead people, basically. Why was he fired? Because he wrote on the report, cause of death, birth. He was Buddhist coroner, that's why he wrote that. Anyway, it's funny because we don't usually think in terms of causes for death as being birth, right? Usually we think about things like heart attacks and crossing the street without looking. Those cause death. Yeah. Well, you might say, Sunyo, that to me this difference is really marginal, right? Causes or dependencies, whatever, to me it's the same. And I would say, good, that's fine. Yeah, I'm not saying that's wrong again. But sometimes I see there are instances where this difference can actually be relevant. Like here with birth causing death, okay, yeah, we could say that, and it doesn't really cause too much of an issue. But when we think about, for example, about karma, or when we talk about karma, that is synonymous to the second link in dependent origination, which is the sankhara, which we have translated as willed acts. I've had this question a couple times. How does karma cause rebirth? But is that the way to look at karma? Or should we ask the question, your rebirth depends on your karma. That's you. See, that's looking at the thing from a different angle. Does karma cause rebirth? Is that the point of the teaching of karma? Or is the teaching of karma more about how your rebirth depends on what you do? I think it's the letter, the one that's in green here. And you could compare it, karma, I think, you could compare to a steering wheel in a car. The steering wheel depends on where you go. In this case, the car is driving through samsara. We're all driving through samsara, going along. And we use the steering wheel to decide where do we go in our next rebirth. If we do bad actions, we go to a lower realm. If we do good actions, we go to a higher realm, very generalized. And we can look at craving as the throttle. That's how I like to think of it. Craving moves us forward. So, and you could say craving is really more like a cause for rebirth. Karma is what decides our direction. That's how I like to think of things. It seems to me, anyway, to make things a bit more understandable, right? There is no sutta where the Buddha explains how karma causes rebirth. When he speaks about karma, he always talks about specific results or specific actions. Well, I say specific, but he talks quite general, like good, nice, gentle actions, they lead to good, nice, and gentle results. Bad, evil, and harmful actions, they lead to bad, evil, and harmful results. By results, mainly meaning rebirth, yeah? Good rebirth or bad rebirth. But it doesn't explain the underlying principle, so I don't think that's the point of karma. Can people relate to this, or is it maybe just me? Yeah? I see some people nodding, so I'm happy about that. If I can ring a bell in some people, then I'm already happy. Yeah. So this is just an example of an instance where the difference between causality and dependency can actually make some difference, pragmatically speaking. Here's another example. Sensations, that's vedana, do they cause craving, or versus craving depends on sensation? Yeah. If I would hear somebody say sensations cause craving, and it sounds to me like almost like you're stuck, basically, because if sensations cause craving, how are you going to solve the problem? There's always going to be sensations, right? And if sensations would cause craving, that wouldn't be right. There's more to it, right? There's also ignorance, which you need for there to be craving. But we could say craving depends on sensations. We have certain sensations that decide that we have certain kinds of craving. We experience the world in a certain way, we will crave for certain things. And if we experience it in another way, we will crave for yet other things. Yeah? So another small example of how just thinking in terms of causality versus dependency can slightly change the way we look at the suttas. And again, to reemphasize, I'm not saying one is wrong, the other is absolutely right. One is absolutely wrong, the other one is absolutely right. I'm not saying that. I think that looking purely in terms of dependency, not in terms of causality, makes things a bit more simple. Yeah? Happy everybody still? Cool. Now, I'm going to look at a bit more things from a bit more of the background of translations and Pali. And I know that this does not really inspire everybody as much, but I think it's still an important thing to address the Pali, because the Pali, the language the Buddha spoke, or the language we have the suttas in, that is really the core language that we can rely on if we have to interpret the Buddha's teachings. There's also Sanskrit and Chinese, which are useful. But we've seen before with the discussions that many of you think that one of the issues that there is many misinterpretations of dependent origination is because of translation. Our group pointed that out, some other groups as well. So I want to look a little bit at translation of certain key terms. First, the word paticca. This is a very important word because it occurs in paticca samuppada itself. So paticca means dependent. Yeah? It comes from the verb paceti, which means something like to fall back on or to depend on. Paticca does not really mean cause. So when we say paticca samuppada, therefore everybody translates this as dependent origination and not as causal origination. And the meaning of paticca, we can also see that in context of the suttas. And when we try to interpret a word, it's always useful to first look at easier context, where a word is used in a daily life context. For example, this is not related to dependent origination, but it uses the same word, paticca. The body is dependent, paticca, on food and will die without it. Food does not cause a body. Or another example, an oil lamp burns dependent on the wick and the oil. The wick and the oil don't really cause the burning of the oil lamp, right? So just illustrating the word paticca here, it means dependent, not cause. And now one example from dependent origination. Shariputta speaking here. Imagine two bundles of reeds that stand leaning against one another. Likewise, the mental aspects and form of a being, this is the nama rupa, are dependent on consciousness, and consciousness is dependent on the mental aspects and form of a being. The slide here is cut off at both at the top and the bottom. My apologies for that. So you see here on the picture on the right, you see two bundles of hay leaning against another. This is where this image comes from. When the farmers were drying their hay or drying their reeds, they would put them like this, as you see there on the picture, because of course the wind can get through more easily and the reeds or the hay that dries easy. And you would see these kind of things in the fields in the Buddha's time. So the Buddha is using Sariputta is using a visual image here. But my point being is those hay bales don't cause one another to stand like that, right? It was the farmer who caused them to stand like that, you could say that. But in the end, these hay bales, they are dependent on one another. They need one another. Yeah? Another word, paccaya, which is actually almost the same word as paticca. They sound very similar and they're from the same verb, derived from the same verb as well. So the word paccaya, it means something like support or condition or something one depends on, or a requisite or a necessity. Those are all like synonyms. Yeah. Here's a quote out of a daily context.
You want to mention that this is the word which actually occurs in dependent origination.
Yeah.
Just to make that point.
Yeah, it'll come. It'll come. I think.
Just to say why are you talking about this word? That's what I meant.
Yeah. This is also used in dependent origination.
Its link.
So here's an example of it in daily context, though, not in the dependent origination context. Somebody gives clothes, bedding, food, drink, and various kinds of requisites to the monks, or to the nuns. Yeah. It could be the nuns as well. In this case, it says bhikkhus, I think, in the sutta. But requisites is like a necessity, something the monks need, something they depend on, right? By requisites they mean, for example, a hut or something that we need to live in, right? It's like a requisite, something that you would need when the climate gets really bad. It's not something that causes the monks, that's the point I'm trying to make here. Or another example in daily context, a noble one's knowledge is not dependent on others. That's another example. And here's an example, independent origination itself. Dependent, pachaya, on birth, there is old age and death. We've seen before that there can be many causes for death, really. You can, as I said, heart attacks, crossing the street without looking. You could have a stroke, you could just not wake up in the morning, I don't know. All kinds of things can happen, right? We could say there's many causes for death. But one thing that we need for there to be death is birth. Yeah? This is what specific conditionality means. We need the specific condition of birth for there to be death. So another Pali term, again, I apologize for people who are not so familiar with Pali, but I also realize that there's many people here who are actually very well knowledge. And some people came up to me earlier quoting suttas that I don't even recall. So some people may even be more knowledge than me. And for those people, this may ring a bell. So we've got here again the word pachaya here. But in front of is idap pachaya. Idap means this or it or that or something. So you can translate this as dependent on it or dependent on something specific. Idap pachaya ta, the ta here means something like ness or see. It makes it abstract. It's here this dependency, this cy here that sort of agrees with the ta. So this word that is very often used when explaining dependent origination, idapachayata, you could translate as dependency on something specific that depends on birth, for example. It's also often translated as specific conditionality. When I first read a book that said specific conditionality, I probably looked somewhere something like this. What does that mean? Specific conditionality. It didn't mean anything to me. This may be because my native language is not English. Yeah? So the word conditionality I wasn't even familiar with. Specific, well, I could sort of get the idea, but I couldn't put it together at all. So my translation is dependency on something. To me, that makes a bit more sense. They mean the same thing, specific conditionality or dependency on something. Means the same. Makes a little bit more sense to me. What else have we got? Okay, so here I've got a sutta where this idapachaya is used. Here you see idapachaya is used in the context of dependent origination to show you how the Buddha used it. He's talking to Ananda here. Ananda, if you are asked whether old age and death are dependent on something, idapachaya, you should answer that they are. And if you are asked what old age and death are dependent on, you should answer that old age and death are dependent on birth. Yeah? The principle is not so hard, really. Yeah? But does the Buddha say cause here? No. No, he's not talking about cause. Yeah? He's talking about dependency. So what else have we got? All right, it's the next slide. Let me address one more Pali word, which I didn't make any slide on. But it's the word nidana, yeah? Which is also related to dependent origination. This word is in the title of the Nidana Sutta, which is the sutta which we've quoted a lot, right, Arjan? Yeah. What do you think about the word Nidana? Does it mean cause?
I think it means more like a source. And I think Bhikkhu Bodhi, he makes the argument that he was using source for some other thing. So that's why, and I think he had a problem making a source into causality, making it into an abstract noun. So that's why I decided to use cause, but actually his preferred translation is actually source.
Really?
Yeah, which is closer to dependency.
So you contacted him about it, or just read it somewhere?
Yeah, somewhere it came up. Yeah.
Because that's exactly what I was thinking. Nidana doesn't really mean cause, it means source. Yeah. And a source and a cause, of course, are different things. Because you could talk about a source of water, like a well or something, yeah? Well, that's a source of water. But a well doesn't cause water, it's not the cause of water. So the word Nidana, often translated as cause, doesn't really mean it to me. Yeah? For one example where it's used in the suttas, it's used sometimes to abbreviate an introduction story of where a sutta has been spoken. And for example, a sutta is spoken in Savati, then the editors of the suttas would say, instead of telling the whole story of the Buddha was staying in Savati and then the monks came to the Buddha and they asked this, etc., they just abbreviate it by saying Savati Nidanang. The source of this text is Savati. That's what it means. Of course, it doesn't mean the cause of this text is Savati. Yeah. So this is another word, another instance where translation can sometimes be making things more complicated instead of making things more easy. All right, so a little bit more on translations, actually, to look at this principle of dependency. I've given you examples before of how the rain depends on clouds, how Christmas depends on December the 25th. And the Buddha also explained dependency, but he didn't do it by examples only. He also explained the principle of dependency by in a bit more abstract terms, and these are probably very familiar to some of you. I'll just read out the Pali because it's so often quoted. We couldn't just leave it out. Although we would like to explain things, of course, more in English than in Pali. Sometimes it's just nice or at least interesting to go back to the source of things. Imasmin sati idang hoti. Imasu pada idang uppacchati. Imasmin asati idang nahoti. Imasmin niroda idang niruddhati. And this happens in many, many suttas. For example, this one, 12.21, if you want to look it up. And this is the Buddha's explanation of dependency. Say much, so this is my translation for this. There will be this, only if there is that. This arises because that arises. If there isn't that, there won't be this. If that ceases, this will cease. And I'm putting it in a bit more modern way, because this and that is very confusing, this and that and this. I'll use A and B. Sorry again for this being cut off. I think it has to do with the projector. Or else it may be my fault as well. It could be. There will be B only if there is A. I'm just replacing this and that with B and A here. There will be B only if there is A. B arises because A arises. If there isn't A, there won't be B. If A ceases, B will cease. That is the Buddha's explanation of dependency in more abstract terms. Now let's plug in, instead of A and B, plug in some of the examples that we've seen before. There will be rain, only if there's clouds. This is my thing. The Buddha didn't talk about rain and clouds, right? just to make sure, because before we talked about dependent origination is all about rebirth and not about other things. Now I'm using it with something else, with rain and clouds. That is not dependent origination, right? I'm just illustrating the principle. This is my idea. There will be rain only if there are clouds. If rain falls, it's because the clouds formed first. If it stops raining, it stops raining if there are no more clouds. If the clouds disappear, the rain will stop. Yeah? It's sort of saying four times the same thing. You need clouds for there to be rain. if there are no clouds, there cannot be rain. It would be a very awkward day when that happens, when it comes to rain comes pouring down, but it's sunny overhead. So you could say, in other words, clouds are necessary for rain, or rain is dependent on clouds. Yeah? Everybody okay? Yeah? That's cool. Yeah, maybe we do some questions. Or how long have I been going? Oh, 45 minutes already. You know what we'll do? We'll do a 5-minute break, and then we will do some questions. Ding. Sorry to disturb you. All right. Q's and hopefully some A's.
I have one quick question. You've defined dependency, the Pali word. What's the Pali word for cause? And what sort of, if you can think of any off the top of your head, examples? Too tired, okay.
The Pali word for cause. Hetu could be, but hetu I think more of reason. Reason and cause is also slightly different. I can't really think of what would be the Pali word for cause. Maybe that is partly to do with us looking at causality slightly differently from how it was maybe seen back in those days. Maybe in those days, if you just had the reason or the source of things, that sort of implied, maybe in some instances, maybe that implied cause, but not always. So sometimes maybe it's not so bad to translate pachaya as cause. Could be, and then in some cases that is okay. But I think when we talk about dependent origination, that can be slightly confusing sometimes. So maybe a Pali word could be pachaya or hetu sometimes maybe, but in other cases not. This is a thing with translations. There's never, almost never, one perfect translation for one word. You always have to look at context to decide on a translation of a term. So in some contexts you translate a word one way, in other contexts you use it another way. You know a word, the best word for cause?
No, not really. sometimes it's not given that there is a word in Pali for cause. You know, it may be a concept that arises in English and other languages. So it may just be, maybe it is, yeah.
Please wait for the microphone so everybody can hear, including us. Oh, all right. Maybe we'll do Prem first and then you can ask.
Thank you. Applying the same dependencies to the step of the dependent origination, ignorance and willed acts. Willed acts depend on ignorance, or ignorance causes willed acts? There could be willed acts caused even without ignorance. It could be quite knowledgeable, but still can cause bad willed acts.
Yeah, when we talk about sankhara willed acts in terms of dependent origination, yeah, it only means those acts that are actually coming from ignorance, and all other willed acts don't. This is another translation issue maybe, but those don't really count for dependent origination. As Ajahn Sujato suggested before, sankhara translates as creation, so only when sankhara is
Brahmali, thank you.
Oh, sorry. It's late. What did I say?
Sujata.
Brahmali. I don't know why I said that. As Ajahn Brahmali pointed out, you could think of the sankhara as creation, and I like that as well. So it's only when sankhara leads to rebirth that it counts. Otherwise, it doesn't really count for dependent origination.
Yeah. Thank you.
Got a question here first, yeah.
Who's question?
Oh, okay, Venerable.
Okay. I have sort of two parts to this. So I'll just do the one, the easy one that relates to your slide first. I mean, I understand what you're trying to distinguish, well, at some level, between this idea of dependency and causation. But I'm not clear how that actually proves it, because if you just substitute the word for your example for what would be the cause, such as humidity, it would still work, right? There will be rain only if there is humidity. If there is humidity, it's because if rain falls, it's because humidity formed first.
Yeah.
So how does this illustrate the distinction between a causal factor and a conditional factor?
Yeah. Well, the point is, would you say that clouds cause rain? Would you speak in terms of rain in that way?
I guess I'm not arguing the point of like the science behind it, but I'm just trying to understand how this will convince us that independent origination, we're talking about dependent conditional factors, not causal factors, when the same sentence structure works for both. So avijja paccaya sankhara, it could very well be a causal relationship. How do we tell the difference just from looking at this language?
Okay, yeah, so I don't see a causal relation in that, in these kind of statements. I don't think it means that, for example, here, plugging in rain and clouds, I said it's my thing. It's a bit of a trick.
Plug in humidity, which is a cause, and it still works, right?
Even you could question that. Is humidity the cause? Or as humidity, is that also, is that caused by some law of physics or whatever? And you could always question what is the cause for something. Even with birth and death. Death, I said heart attacks cause death, but heart attacks, is that really a cause of death, or is it the lack of oxygen to your brain that is the cause of death? Yeah? That is caused by the heart attack. Point is, when you think in terms of causes, things become more complicated compared to when you just think of things in terms of dependency. You can very easily point out dependencies like birth, or death is dependent on birth, right? We would all agree on that. But we wouldn't really say death is caused by birth. I don't think I'm making sense to you.
Okay, let's see if I go into the second part. So if you know, we just take the common way of expressing the Four Noble Truths, I mean, often you hear people say, right, it's like, okay, first noble truth is suffering. Second noble truth is craving causes suffering.
Yeah.
And so is it a cause or is it a condition? Should we actually be saying, you know, craving, yeah, condition suffering? And so I have to admit, I spent the 5 minutes meditating, like chanting the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, trying to find, hey, does it actually say in there? And it doesn't. It goes straight to like, oh, this is the second noble truth. It's, you know, the craving that leads to new rebirth. But it doesn't actually state the relationship between craving and suffering. Is it a cause or is it a condition?
Yeah, you.
And ultimately, does it matter?
Yeah. In some cases, you could call it a cause. And I'm, as I said before, I'm not myth-busting here, right? I'm not saying that if you say craving causes suffering, that is wrong. No, I would probably say that as well, right? But in some instances, like the ones that I've shown before with karma and what was the other example, with feeling and craving, if you think in terms of cause there, it can make things more complicated. In some instances, it's all right to think in terms of causes. As again, it's not 100% wrong, and it's also not... The thing here is not to be theoretical also. Yeah? Not to be too theoretical or to be too much like, this is right, this is wrong. Just trying to give you another way of looking at things that I think agrees a lot with how the Buddha explained dependent origination. Yeah? If you have to go back through all the 12 factors and analyze them in terms of causes, it can be much more complicated than if you look at it in terms of dependencies. That's sort of the point I'm trying to make.
Ajahn, on this discussion, could you distinguish between the necessary condition and the supportive conditions? So I was just thinking, you also had that word necessary condition on the last, there you are, clouds are necessary for rain. So there is the necessary or the essential, you used the specific. Without that, it wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
But there are supportive conditions as well, which is ancillary, complementary things. Like you said, gravity and the humidity for the rain. So they are not necessary or essential conditions, but the clouds is the necessary condition. So before dependent origination, I think, there is the necessary condition, which out, without, if there is no avijja, there is no sankara or the rubbish. I read that rubbish is the original word for sankara, Pali. The Buddha must have taken that word, which is rubbish. We are collecting a lot of rubbish.
It's a different word, but it's almost...
almost similar?
Very, very similar to sankara, but it's actually another word.
It's another word, but similar.
It sounds similar. Yeah.
But my point was whether this necessary, the dependency, for the dependency, it has to be the necessary condition.
Yeah. So this is sort of what dependency explains necessary condition. When you, I keep coming back to this example of birth and death because it's most relatable to everybody. So for there to be death, birth is necessary, right? So that's what it means, a necessary condition, right? But necessary condition is really a modern term, a logical term. And I don't see the Buddha really using that, so that's why I try to avoid talking about those sorts of things, because as I said before, when I go intellectual, I try to make things as simple as possible. That's how I like to look at the suttas. Yeah.
Well, the second one that I was going to refer is that word hetu. I mean, cause. Someone said hetu, because hetu pala is translated as cause and effect.
Probably, yeah.
Some people might translate it like that. Yeah.
Hetu.
I know there's more questions, but is it okay if I move on a bit? Because I still have quite a few things to discuss. When I was in university, my professor in engineering, he once said to me, if a customer asks you for how long something is going to take, just plan everything that can go wrong in your project, add it all up, and then double it in the time that it takes. And it's sort of the same with this Ajahn Brahmani has experienced before. We think we're going to be much faster than we actually are. And I think I still got some important points to make, and maybe they will answer some of your questions, right? So I'll move on a little bit. So yeah, we've sort of talked about this before. You can die only if you were born, right? If that happens, it's because birth happened. You can't have death happening without birth, basically. You won't die again if you are not born again. If birth ceases, death will cease. Or in other words, birth is necessary for death. Death is dependent on birth. Yeah. I don't think there's a word for necessary used by the Buddha in context of dependent origination. I'm not aware of it anyway. But this is what it implies. Here is an explanation of the same principle in the words of Bhikkhu Bodhi. Specific conditionality, idapachayata is the word for that, is a relation of indispensability, or in other words, necessity, and dependency. The indispensability, or in other words, the necessity of the condition, for example, birth, to the arisen state, for example, aging and death, and on the other hand, the dependency of the arisen state upon its condition. Some people are much better in words than me, Bhikkhu Bodhi being one of them. And if you want to read more of his explanation, he has got many great writings on dependent origination that are part of the source material that we put online. So maybe this explains it to people better than I can explain. But I think it says the same thing that I tried to say before. So we can look at things in terms of causality, where one thing causes the other. Like here you have dominoes. One domino falls, causes the other, causes the other, causes the other, causes the other. Right? We could look in terms of that. Or we could think in terms of dependency. Does anybody know this game? Two bad bricks, yeah.
Three bad bricks.
Actually. Yeah.
Yeah, something wrong with this.
Yeah. Anyway, this is a game, and players have to pull out bricks one by one, and place them on top. So, point here is all the top bricks they're not really caused by the bottom bricks. The bottom bricks, the top bricks, they depend on the bottom bricks. So if maybe a visual image helps for you, then this is another way of thinking of this difference between causality and dependency. Whatever, got it. Okay, now, this is actually the principle of dependency, how the Buddha applies it and why. This is a really nice sutta to read. I recommend everybody to read, Sanyutta Nikaya 12.10. Before my awakening, when I was not yet fully awake, still to wake up, Bodhisattva, I thought, oh no, people have really gotten into the trouble. They get born, age, die, pass on, and then get reborn again. Yeah? This is really clearly about rebirth. And no one sees any escape from this suffering of old age and death and such. When will an escape from all this finally be found? This, by the way, is my translation, so sometimes a little bit of a free translation, but anyway. Then I thought, there will be old age and death only if there is what? What? So here he is applying this principle before his own enlightenment, right? What are old age and death dependent on? Then, by focusing appropriately, yoniso manasikara, I penetrated it. I understood that there will be old age and death only if there is birth. Old age and death are dependent on birth. Here we see how the Buddha actually used this principle of dependency, used it himself to contemplate life and death and all these factors, and so on. He contemplates all the 12 links of dependent origination in this way. So next he asks, what does birth depend on? Birth depends on bhava, like a continued existence is one way of translating it. And what does that depend on? What does that depend on? And then in the end he comes to the beginning of dependent origination. There will be willed acts only if there is what? What are willed acts dependent on? Then by focusing appropriately, I penetrated it. I understood that there will be willed acts only if there is ignorance. Or in other words, willed acts are dependent on ignorance. Well, this is how the problem comes about, yeah? But and then he sums it up. This we've seen before. So dependent on ignorance, there are willed acts, etc. Dependent on willed acts, there is consciousness, and so on, and so on, and so on. We will explain all these links in more detail, but it comes down to what I'm trying to say here about dependency, right? I then thought, there won't be old age and death if there isn't what? Old age and death will cease if what ceases? Then by focusing appropriately, I penetrated it. I understood there won't be old age and death if there is no birth. If birth ceases, old age and death will cease. And so I'm going through all the factors again. Then I thought, there won't be willed acts if there isn't what? Willed acts will cease if what ceases? Then, by focusing appropriately, I penetrated it. I understood there won't be willed acts if there is no ignorance. If ignorance ceases, the willed acts will cease. Now, to sum it up, if ignorance ceases, willed acts will cease. If willed acts cease, consciousness will cease, etc., etc., etc. And if birth ceases, old age and death and sorrow, grief, pain, sadness, and distress will cease. So, what I'm saying, trying to say anyway, I hope some people of you did this sort of rings true, or this means something to you practically speaking, that the Buddha here is not asking himself what causes all these things. He asks himself, what do these things depend on? Yeah? It's paticca, dependency. That's the question he asks himself. And this is slightly different in meaning from causality. So when maybe you yourself going to contemplate these things at some point, maybe you change the question a little bit from causality to dependency. And maybe while I'm speaking to you now, this difference doesn't make much sense to you, or maybe you can't relate to it very well. Maybe it doesn't really mean much. Seems maybe theoretical. Maybe at some point in the future, when you contemplate things, maybe after a nice meditation, and you look at things in terms of dependency instead of causality, maybe then it will make a little bit more sense. Yeah. It's just, I'm trying to give you another tool, basically, to look at things. You could still use causality as well, but I think because the Buddha explains things in terms of dependency, not so much causality, that's probably also the best way for us to contemplate things, right? So, when we have this game of bricks again, and we could pull out the bottom brick here of ignorance, right? And then the whole chain of things comes crashing down. If we pull out ignorance or unknowing, if we remove our not understanding reality, not understanding these things like anatta, dukkha, and anicca, like the suffering, the non-self, impermanence. If we fully understand them, being enlightened, huh, then all these other things will come crashing down some point in the future as well. Will acts, consciousness, etc. This is how I like to think about dependent origination. And that is what I had to say. So to sum it up, and then we can do some more questions for those who want to stay behind. To sum it up, you can think in terms of causality when we analyze all these different links in dependent origination. You can also look at it in terms of dependency. And I think these are slightly different. The difference may not be pragmatic for some people, but for others, maybe, yeah, this rings a bell, right? Maybe they think, yeah, this is a bit more easy, this dependency. I can get that more easily than causality. Maybe other people, it's the other way around. I don't know. But I think the Buddha taught about dependency and not so much causality. Yeah, these terms, yeah, Venerable, you said sometimes you can interchange these terms, that's right, but maybe sometimes not, so yeah, that was that. And I realize it's a little bit theoretical, so if you're like not really into this kind of stuff, that's all right as well. And in the end, it all comes down to the meditation and getting our insight through that, and then it doesn't really matter whether we call it causality or dependency. These things are just words in the end, and reality is not cannot really be expressed in words, I don't think. So, Ajahn Bhamali, do you have anything nice to add before we do more questions?
I do, but we haven't got much time.
Yeah.
If I start adding things, I might get into trouble. So maybe just ask a question and see what happens, and if it kind of relates to certain areas, I can say something perhaps.
So yeah, this is 5 o'clock time for us, official time for ending. So everybody who needs or wants to leave, be happy to do so. We won't keep check on who's leaving. But if you want to stay behind for some questions and answers, they are also welcome to. And hope to see you next week. Hope we haven't chased you away with all these theoretical kind of things.
Bhante, I have just one consideration. The second noble truth is the truth of origin of suffering. The word is samudaya, so there is no call on cause or dependency in there. So just to clarify, so we don't have any dispute on that.
That's a nice point, actually.
Yeah, it's samudaya, the word there.
Yeah, yeah. Samudaya, yeah. That also doesn't mean cause, right? Yeah, it means origin, which is again something slightly different. Origin meaning more like source. Yeah. A good point.
Bhante, thank you very much for this session. I just wanted to clarify whether I understood the point between dependency and causation, cause, because that makes quite a big difference to how I look at it. So if I take the point between feeling and craving, craving definitely depends on feeling, but feeling does not always cause craving, right?
That's what I would say, yeah, because for example, an arahant, she would or he would still experience feeling, but not craving. Yeah.
But even non-arahants, not all feelings lead to craving.
Yeah, I would say so, yeah.
So, So looking at it as dependency makes more sense for the whole chain for me. So thank you very much for taking time to explain. Thanks.
Thank you for that comment. That means a lot. Thank you.
that shows dependent origination. You know, in simple terms, you know, okay, it needs an object, a situation, or what, to trigger the process, isn't it? Like, for example, you know, if we see a nice object, you know, a nice figure, okay, yeah, through our consciousness, this thing, okay, yeah, there is the feeling of desire arises, okay, and then it enters through the six senses, you know. From there, there's feeling this thing, and then there's one thing, this perception, you know. And then we exaggerated the figure that's lacking. Then there's contact, craving, you know, and then all these desire things come, and then there's a becoming. That's a process, isn't it? In simple terms.
Generally. I wouldn't say becoming, but
And the other thing, what does it mean by that becoming, you know, the ninth or tenth link?
Yeah, becoming, I don't really like that translation. I think Ajahn Brahmali addressed that last week. That is, we think is a mistranslation, becoming. And, well, maybe we didn't discuss it here, actually, but we discussed it with Ajahn Brahm. Wasn't that it?
Yeah, probably.
Maybe also. Can't remember now. Yeah, either we discussed it individually or we discussed it here. That becoming for bhava is not really a appropriate translation, because bhava means more like continued existence. Becoming. Maybe
could it be suffering? Could that be like suffering arises?
Right, it implies suffering.
Not. I mean, there's old age and death and suffering. But there's, you know, like it. That does, when there's a craving. Then a situation will arise in it, whether good or bad. If you have it too much, then you're all doing it, that's a bad thing comes.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
Not really, to be honest. I'm not really sure what your question is. Yeah. But I think you got the general idea. And we will explain becoming. We will talk about bhava more a couple session weeks from now. And then maybe then it will become clear why we prefer not to use becoming.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Eddie.
Bhante, these visual examples are really helpful to someone like me with a sort of visual background. So can I thank you for...
Nope. Yeah, of course. Sorry for interrupting.
Can I thank you for showing us how to get 11 bad bricks in a wall to disappear pretty quickly?
Thank you. Ah, there's a question there. Oh, sorry.
I just thought that was a very good one between the first two, the vidya and the consciousness. You have, you know, the practice really that shows that.
Ah, yeah, I'm happy that these kind of pictures make some sense to people. Yeah. The Buddha himself explained things in very visual ways as well. Also in dependent origination, he talked about fire, about growing plants, about all sorts of things that are very visual examples. And I think for many people, those visual examples, they help a lot. And that's why the Buddha did it. And hopefully we will be able to explain all those examples in more detail in other weeks. Maybe use the microphone.
Isn't there willed action without ignorance for the liberated, for the awakened?
Sorry, hold it. I can't hear very well.
Isn't there willed action without ignorance for the fully awakened?
Ajahn Brahmali, you want to?
There is a certain willed action that are related to craving. You crave, and so you will your actions to make things, to create that, to kind of satisfy that craving. Yeah. But the actions that are for enlightened persons, they are often just more kind of functional. They're not based on craving. They're not based on the desire to make a particular future. Craving is the idea of making a particular future. So they are willed acts, but not willed in the same way as for an ordinary person, where you are trying to create a particular outcome, you know, create happiness for yourself or something like that. So there's a different kind of will, and that's why these are called sankharas. Sankhara here refers to, I think, in this case, those particular actions we are trying to create a future. Sankhara literally means to, I think, create is actually a good translation for sankhara. Yeah. Or the Arahant doesn't try to create a future. Yeah, this is the thing. For the Arahant, they will just do whatever is required to be done to function, you know, as a person, you know, eat or whatever, or walk here to give a talk. But they don't try to create happiness in the future. That craving, which is about the drive to create happiness at some future point, that has completely gone. So whatever they do is just to function, is a functional kind of willed act. It's not a willed act which is which purpose it is to create happiness in the future. They understand that happiness doesn't lie in the future. Happiness lies now in allowing all the will to die down and just go into a jhana state or go to parinibbana or something like that. That is what happiness is. They have no idea of creating a future happiness.
But there is willed action.
There is willed action, but not sankhara in that sense. Yeah, so there's willed actions. Maybe willed actions could be improved upon as a translation, perhaps. Yeah.
Thank you.
Isn't it also true to say that actually this doesn't apply to the Arahant anyway, because this is about dependent origination of suffering, and that he's moved through to cessation and onto something else altogether? So it doesn't actually, you know, you're talking about willed acts in a very particular context.
Yeah, only so, when they are coming from ignorance, only those things we call willed acts in dependent origination. Yeah, so you have to have the ignorance for something to be a willed act in context of dependent origination. That is basically what Venerable is trying to say. And if there is no ignorance, then sankhara doesn't really come into play. So although we use the word willed acts, that may be they don't really count for dependent origination in turn when it's an arahant. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, there's no karma. Maybe it could translate as karma. Yeah? And an arahant doesn't do any karma. Yeah. That's a good point. Karma would be a nice. It's not really a translation, but we all sort of know what it means, right? Karma. Because karma is still sort of Pali word, so it's not a translation. All right. Thank you, everybody, for being here. And let's pay respects to the best teacher of all.
Okay.
Thank you.